Welcome back. We are going to continue with text number 104.
It is because of them that wrath, anger, war, murder, and all other evils have such power over mankind.
All right. So we have to return back and to remind ourselves what is that. Where are we? We have to go to text 101, and those are, how are it?
Avarice, self-esteem, and sensual pleasure.
Yeah, he's talking about those three passions, and he says that there are like source of many bad things which are happening. But, well, if we think a little bit just about this sentence, this text, and we try to analyze these bitter things or painful things which are happening to us or to others, and we try to go after the roots, we we come to these passions. And we can see that there are behind those situations which cause like this tension, family, and working place, among friends. And it's sometimes we ask, how can we prevent this, you know, how can we heal the situation in family or working place and our friends. And this is very common question people give to priests, you know, what can I do to solve this problem? What kind of steps I'm supposed to do to somehow heal this situation or this tension in family especially? And it's really difficult to give a clear answer, because correct answer to this is it might surprise us. This holy teacher of spiritual life, they answer that in these situations we should start to search, not ways how to fix the others, but we should look to our heart and search how to conquer our passions. And it is something like paradox, you know, that, well, we can say, if we get this answer, so we say, well, but it's evident that this evil comes out from passions which are in those other people. So how can I do this? Why I supposed to look to my own heart? It seems to us that it is like very only pious advice which doesn't solve anything. But true is that if we try to follow this advice, something happens. It's difficult to explain and to explain how this mechanism is working, but this knowledge comes from experience. If we in this situation when there is a tension, we not, instead of trying to fix somebody, to talk to the person, to try to convert the person, if we at the time start to test our heart, and when we start to correct ourselves. And it means this correction, it doesn't mean that we can make decisions from that point, from the time we are perfect. If we find something hard, so, and we want to fix that, it's usually a long journey. When we are paying attention to ourselves, and it is like not one moment, it's days, weeks, even months until we somehow conquer or take out bad habit, bad acting, bad moving of heart, usually would be. It takes time, and we are concentrating on ourselves, and we are healing that. One thing is that during that time, something happens, and we realize that those people who are making like some troubles, usually during the time they start to behave better. There is some kind of change. And, well, I don't know, I don't want to say any some kind of heresy, but from my own experience and experience people who were trying that, it seems that there is some kind of God's grace coming out from this our effort to concentrate on ourselves. And I call it as it's like radioactivity, you know, which we are trying to do something, but it like spreads everywhere, it reaches everybody around us. And this grace, I would say, has power to fix many things we see around us. And because of that, you know, many people, they when they read this advice of the Holy Fathers, they say that, well, they are not practical people because they are very passive. They don't want to be involved in fixing things. You know, they are very passive. But, well, this is something how probably it should be done. And I go back to my one experience, or just one sharing of one man. His son was thinking, from Slovakia, his son, the man I'm talking about, was thinking about seminary. He was in high school. And usually after we finish high school, you go to university. It's like 6 years now to finish seminary. So he was talking from the beginning of high school that, well, he wants to go to seminary, and well, parents were very happy. And but he was like in third grade in high school. He had another year in front of him. And he started to, maybe this youth was working him, you know, he started to act strange. He went to parties with friends and doing things his parents didn't expect from him, especially when he expressed his desire to go to seminary. And once this father told him, you know, if you are going to continue in this way, you are going to lose your vocation. You will not go to seminary. And the answer was, maybe I'm not supposed to go to seminary. Mm-hmm. It was very painful for that father. And he told me that, well, I didn't know what to do. He said it was very painful for him. And he understood, I'm not going to mess with that because I don't know if it is vocation or not. Who am I, you know? And what he started to do, he said, I started to think, what happened during this last year, what happened that he changed. And he approached this exactly in this way, that he started to test his heart. Probably I, as a father, failed. Because he started to follow different examples and advices or a way of life that I was teaching him. And so he was like somehow accusing himself and it was very painful. And he, well, those are details, but he found several things that, and he thought, okay, maybe this is what caused that my son lost this zeal which was in him. And he was trying to fix that. And he told me, you know, still I have my knees are aching from prayer, you know, but in the end, but it's like his agony, like this prank or this fight was like over one year. And it took until his son really didn't come with paper application, and parents had to sign it. Okay, welcome. And I recall this story, and at the time I was just taking that his father was fighting in a prayer for the son, but, well, it fits with that, you know, that he didn't start to blame his son that, well, you change, you started bad ways, how to live, and etc. He started to test himself, and he was trying to fix himself. And it turned well, very well. I know that it's sometimes difficult, because when it is evident that that person is doing something bad, and for sure that person is source of problems and tensions, so it's very difficult to say, well, probably I am the problem, you know, I cause that. It's very difficult, but we might try that, you know, as some kind of spiritual exercise. And look, you cannot lose anything with that. Because if you try different ways, you are not able to fix that person. But if you try this exercise, maybe you open channel for God's grace. It will be beneficial for you, because you will grow. Plus, who knows how God works? We don't know with His grace, maybe how it is in His providence.
Christian has a question.
Christian?
Just reminded me, I was reading the Gabor Genitos today. And it happened.
Can you louder? I'm old, you know. I can't hear you wrong.
I was reading the Evergenitos today, and I happened to be reading the Hypothesis on Anger. And I was reading Abba Mark, and he had said the root of all anger is pride, and the way to root out anger simply is to think on Christ. He said, if you have tension in your family, if you are fighting with your brother, think on Christ and think on the suffering that He took on. Think of the things that people said and threw at Him and throughout His entire life, and then think of His death and His resurrection. And He says, who could despoil such a contrite heart? In meekness. Reminded me of it.
Yeah, Evergetios is good. There is a source of many good things and many challenges. It's a very dangerous book.
Father, yes. With the three passions that lead to wrath, anger, one, murder.
Yeah.
Again, I sort of feel here that self-esteem would be equivalent to pride. as you just mentioned. Because, you know, in our society, self-esteem can be positive if a person is not overly proud, but where we refer to people, you know, especially in teaching, we try to keep a student with good self-esteem, good self-worth. So is you think that Mark is saying there that the self-esteem that is the mother of the vices is pride, like too much self-esteem, that where it tips the scale? And
not correct,
okay.
I would say. You know, because when you are talking, and we want people to have this good self-esteem, but it comes out from knowing ourselves. And other name for that is humility. You know, when you have this virtue of humility, so then you are not, humility is not that, humility means that you know who you are, who God is, what is your place. And in this way, it doesn't mean, like sometimes like humility is that that people many times see humility as some as acting behavior which Holy Fathers, they call it false humility. Okay, so because if we say to be humble, it means to be silent, down, and you know, just I it's difficult to describe that, but. Oh, maybe this would be a good example. You have like very good specialist who works in a laboratory, and that person is like about to break or to make a huge discovery. So big specialist, free energy for whole mankind. He's making, and so he knows about his ability to know, so when he goes to work, so he doesn't go under like channels, you know, to make him himself like that, okay, I'm nothing. He knows about himself, you know, but he doesn't.
But he accepts that gift is almost from God, that gift for his abilities.
Yeah, so. It means that if he goes to work and there are many people maybe or there is a need to do some kind of, he sees many needs, so we could say, okay, humble person with humility would go and to do this lower job. He doesn't do this because he knows his responsibility, his position, and he follows that. So it is sign of humility when you are trying to fulfill perfectly your duties, your responsibilities. But during the lunch break, he eats the same person. He eats lunch with his colleagues, and when they finish, he stands up and he collects all the dishes and he takes the place. He acted like servant to the others. This is a sign of humility too, you know, because he chose the lower place. But sometimes humility, it means that, probably I mentioned that before, after one seminar, Bishop John was here, and another priest was here too. And so we had lunch after liturgy, and we were talking about something, and so we started to make compliments to each other, like the priest, he complimented me, I said, no, you are, I said, no, you did, I said, no, you, and he was like, very forth, you know, nicely done, Bishop was like eating, stop it. and he taught us like humility immediately through these words. It means that like this self-esteem is when I do my responsibility well, perfectly, so I know where I am, so I don't like making bigger
and without
smaller.
Expecting.
Okay, so it means exactly. I know who I am, like in the work. It's not good for even for students to support them to be over self-esteem only to the measure of their ability. To they should know where you are, and you know that sometimes. Those students come from school, and I was one of them many times. You know that. Well, I'm going out to change world. they were saying how wonderful preparation they made. All this, and you realize that it's not true. Yes.
So, what leads to a false self-esteem is like. In those days when, oh, everybody gets a trophy and everybody's great and you get just showing up, you're good enough and all that stuff. That's false humility. I mean, false self-esteem. But false humility that you talked about, it can be a source of pride in itself. You know, look how humble I am. Look at how, you know, I am so good. I am so humble. I am not worthy. And it becomes a sense of pride. The other thing that happens is it can be a tool of the enemy because he wants to hold you down and think you are unworthy, to think that you can't make a difference, to think that, you know, nothing you do is good enough for God, that you, you know, and then you don't use the gifts that God gave you because you're stuck in this self-pity because that's what the enemy wants us to do. He doesn't want us to have a true worth and true humility. He doesn't want that. He wants us to have this false humility.
Well, we should not, we should not wear masks. Not because of COVID. Sorry about that. But we should not wear masks. I mean this, that we pretend that what we are not. You know, and sometimes it is like, I tell two examples. I told last week during like this online group in Slovakia, two examples. One example was that When we started these meetings with youth, teenagers, and we meditated over like gospel, some kind of verse, and then next meeting we shared if what happened if we tried to live this verse, and this was funny for me that I knew them all these teenagers. And when it came to sharing during meeting, that they became not natural. Their voice went up and they started to speak with this sweet voice and very nicely and silently and very piously. I said, stop that, you be normal, you know. Don't pretend, I know you, you don't need to pretend that. So it is somehow that they didn't do it on purpose. They learned from observations, and many people were doing that when it came to spiritual things. So they put this mask of pious mask. And the second case was that it was from this area. After the time, I was visiting sick, and I came to one old lady, and she walked very slowly. So I heard a confession, I gave communion, and she insisted that she will walk me out, so to the gate of her front yard. I said, all right, so we walked very slowly, and she was telling me, oh, Father, I'm so happy, you know, Jesus came to my house. I could receive communion, you know, I'm so happy, you know, I can feel this grace. She was telling me, I said, all right, you know. And suddenly she stopped and she said, go to hell! She screamed. I said, what happened? You know, she noticed that a chicken came somehow from like cage and was like making mess among her flowers. So when she saw that, so I started to cry. I couldn't stop to laugh, you know, because this change of mood, you know, from this pious came to like got well and started to like use other words. Not dirty, but not nice, you know. I said, oh my, this grace lasted only a little bit.
From the front door to about like.
Yeah, but it was a funny moment. But sometimes it happens to us, you know. And this causes many times that people don't take us seriously, because they think that we, even if we share very important things, if we are different, it's more than as they know us. It doesn't stick. It doesn't feel, you know, like wow. And I think that it is some kind of like my friend, classmate, you know, he's great guy, very holy, pious, let's put it this way. He was like first seminarian I wanted to kill during first day in seminary. He was so annoying. But we became very good friends. And he's good. But he is great, and you can talk, and you know, he doesn't pretend. He is what he is, but you know that he is striving. He loves God. You know, when he comes out to like to preach, he's totally different. You know, it's like sweet boy, you know, always they loved him because he was talking this way. I said, well, why are you doing that? It's my style. My style. But it doesn't work. No, we should be normal. And normal, it means that this normal should be formed by this knowledge that we know who we are, where we are heading, what we are trying to do. I should not pretend that I am somehow now a very pious person if I am really trying to fight with temptations and be... I don't say that we should not make effort to be nice, not to be rude, to be kind and everything, but it should be our practice through taming these passions than to pretend. Because to tame our passions, to conquer them, is one thing. To pretend is easy thing. When we pretend, we are not doing spiritual work in us. Does it make sense? It's difficult, but... it's difficult. Like this Jane, we buried her today, you know, that I told yesterday that there was this gentleness there was in her. But you knew that if you knew her, like you talked to her for many years, it was always the same. She was this sweet, nice lady, but you knew that there is no mask on her. Or I'm just wrong, maybe she kept the mask all the time in front of me, but you can recognize. I liked one sentence from one sermon, and the priest, he said that false humility has bad smell. The people can recognize it immediately, and they're going away from those people.
I something you learn when you go to seminary is that when someone offers you money, you take it. And because there's a very great temptation to whenever someone, like, oh, you're in seminary here, this will help pay for school. Like, oh, no, like, don't, no, please don't. And then, like, I did that one or two times before I realized that's coming from a place of false humility. Like, I really do need the financial support. I really do. I can't have a job in seminary. And I'm not, like, struggling. But just to humbly accept their generosity and say thank you, and just say thank you, and leave it at that, and not put up some big show. Because if a little old lady at the church wants to give you $10, she is going to give you $10. So that's just something I noticed. That can, it can come out in just not accepting things. You want to say, like, no, I'm self-sufficient, I'm fine, I can handle this myself. And it's just not true, you can't. So that's just something I've noticed. False humility can show up in.
Yeah. The Jewish would say you are denying them a mitzvah. You're denying them a blessing. It's a blessing for them to give that to you.
Yeah.
And you're denying them that blessing.
So. Yeah, sure. Sure. It reminded me, you know, that we have these 300 clubs here. And people, they keep names of these people who are deceased, you know, for many years. But they keep the numbers, they pay relatives. So you can hear, like, you know, like during that dinner, that who won the prize, and many dead people won, you know? And so Rainer Ackman, he asked me 2 years ago, I said, what are we going to do? You know, we have to change somehow. I said, well, maybe we should do as it is in this Jewish, like, joke. So you write a check, you put it cemetery on the tombstone.
If they want it, they cash it.
If not, let's consider a donation to the church.
Right.
All right, we went too far. All right, let's continue to 105.
We must hate avarice, self-esteem, and sensual pleasure as mothers of the vices and stepmothers of the virtues.
Yeah, it's clear. Actually, what he's doing in this text, he just reminds us words or commandment we receive from Christ when he tells us that be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. So we, Christ who suffered for us, who was crucified for us, he expects from all his followers to follow even this path of his suffering. And this suffering, in our case, who follow them, it is suffering which comes out from overcoming these passions. That sensual pleasures, which are, and now, like, it's difficult, you know, that we are in fasting season, and how difficult it is sometimes to resist food. I would say not food, but to certain type of food when it comes, like, I would like to eat this, you know. And it might be without meat, it might be vegan even, but it promises this pleasure which comes from that food. And it's very powerful. I have a story. Abed told me that during his experience during the Great Fast was that he said, no meat, and it was easy, everything was easy. And he was shopping in grocery evening when he came from work, and he went through this aisle, and it's like a freezing stuff, frozen stuff, and he saw ice cream. And he said, well, I would love to have ice cream. And he said, no, it's great fast. So he left grocery, but this ice cream he carried with himself. He said, I came home, and I said, well, probably I could buy that, you know. I would have like divide this to small pieces to have just like little bit. And he said, well, I will buy tomorrow. But it was like, it was growing in me. It was growing, and I there was, what is this, craving for this ice cream was so huge that it, he said, it was like 11 p.m. I took my car and I went to search for the closest like gas station to get ice cream. I said, it was my failure. Well, he didn't say that I'm going to fast from ice cream or something. Actually, he kept all resolutions, but he realized the power of these sensual pleasures, that they have this power. They force you even to go like to go even to search for something specific, you know, immediately. It's big power, strong. So we, and now to conquer that when it arises in us, it's really suffering. It was so huge suffering for him that he failed. And I think that each of us would be able to say many similar stories when we experience this power. But we have to realize that, like for, you know, this craving for ice cream, it was not something sinful, but it was not ice cream was problem. Problem was that this bodily passion, this craving, this desire to have, to body wanted some kind of pleasure, which is flavor of this ice cream or texture, whatever, was promising. It means that body has power, that his body forced him to act upon desires of body. And he did that. And in this way, we can see how weak we are in how these passions are powerful, and if we start to fight with them, so it is this way of cross. It is when we are suffering, and it is real suffering, almost agony, you know, that to conquer that. And only those who can start this journey, who make firm decision to follow Christ. Those who don't make this, they even then don't recognize this passion.
You realize everyone in this room now wants ice cream.
We have like several gas stations around. No problem. If they didn't have this craving, now they have.
I want to be asleep, John was going to wake up at 11 p.m., go out to a gas station, get ice cream.
Yeah, possibly. One of the six, another six.
Because of them, we are commanded not to love the world and the things that are in the world, not so that we should hate God's creation through lack of discernment, but so that we should eliminate the occasions for these three passions.
Okay, so he continues and he gives us another advice how to start this journey, this process of martyrdom in conquering this. And again, he goes and he reminds us what all the saints are telling us. You have to detach yourself from the world, you know, that simplify life and and somehow focus on those things which are up on instead of those who are in the world. Sometimes it's very useful to some kind of return back to the time when we were taught, like children, you know, these basic things about faith or God and man. And I remember we had like catechism. It was small for it was for children in the third grade, elementary school, as a preparation. And we started preparation for first confession at the time with that, and there were questions. And you had to know answers. I don't know, it was over 100 questions, and you had to know that. At least I had to know. And especially I had to know because my father was testing us, and it would be horrible if his son doesn't know. So it was horrible. The others, they know, maybe have, I had to know all. But well, this catechism for children, and I think that many other catechism for children starts with some basic things that why we are in this world, you know? And there is a clear answer, and I like this answer, you know, that at least in our catechism was that we are in the world because we should love God and reach salvation in heaven. Perfect. You don't need more, you know. And another question was there, what we are supposed to do to be able to know God, love God, serve God, and be saved by God? The answer was, we have to believe in God and through prayer and sacraments do good things, good deeds. Actually, in these like words, you have a clear answer. You know, you don't actually, if you understand these words correctly, actually you don't need and more. And for many generations, if you go back, who people didn't know to read, and I think this is why this question answer were created to easy remember. They didn't know, and they kept these basic but important things, the mind, and it, those things were forming their lives. So if we keep these simple like things, answers, or these this truth about our life and our destiny, but these important things, if you keep in mind, so then it is somehow natural that we are turning away from the world and we are turning more and more to God slowly. And if you do this, this movement will help us to really come to this hate towards every single obstacle. It means passions too. Question. You wanted to ask something, or did I miss?
Well, on that one, it's saying, you know, I think I understand that we are commanded not to love the world and the things that are in the world. But then it's disclaiming to say not that we should hate God's creation through lack of discernment, discernment being the ability to judge well. So he's sort of saying, you know, we can appreciate God's creation.
Sure.
But we don't want to, you know, become obsessed with, oh, I can't think of a good example.
Ice cream.
So we
ice cream.
Right. Yeah. But we could appreciate a beautiful sunrise or sunset,
yeah,
because that's the beauty, part of,
sure,
the beauty of God's creation.
Sure.
But ice cream, you know, there's really no need for ice cream.
Yeah, you are right, and especially He said that we have to make discernment to be able not to hate God's creation. And
we have to have the ability to judge what is good to appreciate,
exactly,
and what's maybe to good to limit, so we don't fall into the three passions.
Christian.
Could I add? St. Isaac of Syria says, when we talk about the world, we talk about them as the passions. When we want to refer to them as, in specific, we call them the passions. And the passions, and he lists them all. And he said, if we want to name them in a general term, we call them the world. And this was in his letter that basically said, death to the world. And knowing how far you are detached from the world and from passions is how you are alive to it or how you are dead to it. So it's not so much, I don't think he's so much referring to, like, yes, don't get attached to material things. Don't get attached to material value. But it's also, don't get attached to sin, to the passions, to the things that are in the world that might cause those passions, or that might be like places, things, material things. It's not just material things, it's places, it's people that could incite those passions. So when he refers to the world, I think he's more referring to the passions than he is a sunset or a landscape or things like that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I would tend to agree. That's the way I understood that one.
Well, discernment is always necessary. You know, because material things can be how we are using that can be source of blessing, or it can be detachment, you know. And it depends how you approach that. For example, there are monks who wrote a lot of these letters to the world. They were like spiritual, like Amatos, they were like spiritual fathers to other monks in monasteries outside Amatos, for example, or whoever they were. So they wrote them letters, you know, they got a question, they wrote the letter back. So they needed a pen. There was a monk who went to visit another monk who went to visit his spiritual father, Amatos, and I think that I said this story before. And his monk, when he was there and noticed that his spiritual father has a nice pen, and he said, "Can you give me the pen? He said, "You have a beautiful pen, you know. And I like it." He said, "Take it, you know, it's yours." So he took the pen. He was really so happy, and he walked down from his heels and 2 hours or 3 hours back to his cell. When he came to his cell and he wanted to unlock that, he realized that attachment to this pen. He said this pen became like, okay, I this love towards this pen. So he just turned and he returned back 3 hours unite to his spiritual father, and he said, "Take back your pen, because my heart was tied to this pen." So there is a difference, you know. He was like taken with this lout, you know, to the pen, so he was tied to this. And the other who was writing letters to him, he didn't care, you know.
Yeah.
The pen
was
just
tool.
And doesn't make sense. So even like the same thing, in two situations has, like, you can see different approach of heart. And this is why we are supposed to make this discernment and to give away those things which are somehow tied to our heart.
So it's like the pen itself is inherently like a good thing. It's not evil, but what's evil is the attachment to the pen.
Exactly. And it is not only pen, it can be, you know, it can be whatever it is, you know. All these things, even like these movements in the heart, it doesn't need to be something material, you know, that it's yeah.
It kind of goes back to the what we were talking about at the beginning of just the interior heart of, like, the pen is not the problem. I am the problem, in a way, of, like, my heart is the one that gets attached to this TV show or this event or this habit I have. It's my heart that gets attached to it. It's not the habit itself or the this itself, but my heart, which needs to be purified because it wants these things more than it wants God.
Not so that we should hate God's creation. I shouldn't hate the pen.
Yeah.
Hate the pen.
You should love it with the love it deserves. The love of a pen.
The love of a pen. What a story.
Sounds like a book.
I wouldn't read that book.
Like, you know, even like with this, like, you use this picture, like, this beautiful view, okay, so it can become your idol to search for this beauty. You know, again, when I use this experience, what was I read, that a visitor came to a monk, Manatos, and he was like this, in the mountains. So when this visitor came and he looked at the view of this sea there, and you can see Greece behind us. You have a beautiful view. And this monk said, sure, I didn't notice it. You know? So it is something what it's difficult, you know. And sometimes the beauty you should if you see the beauty you should be trained that beauty to come to lead you to God. But sometimes even the beauty can be something what we are attached to, and we are become like hunters of these beautiful experiences, you know, moments, which because they bring us some kind of pleasure. You know, but another thing is that, and then maybe this would completely touch that beauty, it's that some. There are ladies sometimes who have problems with that, you know, that, okay, now if I'm a Christian, how am I supposed to dress? You know, that they have, if they start to believe that, so, you know, what am I supposed to do? And the answer is, dress beautiful, you know, with elegance, with simplicity, and be beautiful, because the beauty expresses, like, brings beauty of God. But again, it's natural that if we, and this is something like, if we love God and grow in spiritual life, for sure there will be not mess in our houses, because this faith pushes us to order, to beauty. And we feel that we cannot stand even by mess. And the same thing is that, well, we are simplifying our life, but it is still this how we dress in simplicity but beautifully, how we live, it is simply but beautifully. Everything is beautiful, and we grow in our faith. It's a circle of natural movement. But it should not be that I am artificially searching, you know, for this, some kind of. Does it make sense? that is natural comes, but it should not be the goal that I enjoy, and this is like the essential pleasure from these beautiful things. No, that this beauty or this which we need to our life should be something natural. That okay, I'm choosing that, I'm dressing that, or I'm putting like rearranging my house, and I don't know, planting my garden, made this beautiful, just because I love beauty. I love beauty because for me it is like, I feel this unity, this God in this. Not because I enjoy this some kind of pleasure from the essential. All right, thank you very much.